Launching a new brand from scratch is incredibly challenging. No one knows who you are, no one knows the value of your products, and you have to acquire an entirely new audience of buyers. But it can be done and done well. We've all seen the digitally native vertical brands appear out of nowhere and dominate the market. Today, we're talking about what it looks like when one of those brands is just getting started. I'm Kara Hogan, and this is The Empowered Marketer. The Empowered Marketer is brought to you by Zayus, the CRM that helps you anticipate what your shoppers will do next. Learn how Zayus can predict your buyer behavior at Zayus.com. Tracy Wallace has been in the e-commerce world for nearly a decade, but she's a first-time founder. She launched Doris Sleep, an ethically made pillow company, just last year while still working in her previous role at BigCommerce. But she had years of experience working at Naturally Curly, an early content and commerce hair care company, as well as Shopteeks, a Y Combinator-backed fashion company. But Doris Sleep was a whole new ballgame. However, Tracy explained that the business was really in her blood.
And Doris Sleep has been something that I've been wanting to launch or toying with for a really, really long time. My family owns a pillow and cotton manufacturing company, and I've been doing everything in my power to try to convince them to get online, especially because I've been in the e-commerce industry, and there's a lot of reasons why they don't and why they continue to not want to. They still aren't online. They're a B2B company, of course. And so I was like, fine, I'm going to buy the pillows from you guys. I'm going to be a customer of y'all, and I'm going to sell them. So that is what has happened.
That's so funny. I love that they're resistant to the internet. They're just like, no, we don't do the internet.
No. My aunt is convinced that people still like to order via fax, which I find insane because she is like the biggest Amazon user I know. I'm like, what? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Why do you think other people like to fax, but that you like to use Amazon? Anyway, but yeah, she also told me when I launched or when I was about to launch, because I had my family look over the site, clearly want to make sure that they were chill with everything. And I did have to remove a few things that my aunt really didn't want on the website. And as a matter of fact, my aunt didn't want really anything on the website, particularly anything to do with the family. And again, just a lot of reasons for that. But I still remember her telling me, Tracy, if you could just remove the entire about page, like nobody buys anything online because of the story. I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, that's the only reason. Anyway, yeah. So yeah, they're fun.
I was going to say, one of the things I specifically noticed was that on the website, it says that the brand is female-founded, American-made, and third generation. And I found all of that super interesting, which you can tell your aunt.
yes, exactly.
So yeah, why did you decide to include that on your site?
Well, one, because it's super important, two, because it's all true. So my grandfather, who started the manufacturing company back in 1956, was a World War II vet. It was super important for him that as much as possible was sourced in the U.S. So we source a few items, also make items down there as well. But yeah, super important to him that everything was sourced in the U.S. So that became super important to me. It's also just nice because that's kind of part of the family history a little bit. Female founded, because it is female founded. At least the Doris side is. Doris is actually the name of my grandmother, who was married to my grandfather, who started the manufacturing company. And then third generation owned, yeah, like my family and cousins still own and run the business. I mean, it's all part of a larger legacy.
Love that. And so by building this business, you know, you have to find your target market and understand who they are. And obviously, and almost everyone uses a pillow. So how do you figure out who to sell to with your site and figure out that target market?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I did a lot of research prior to launching the brand, even prior to engaging an agency in terms of helping me to build something out. When I was working with the agency, actually, they were like, holy crap, this is the most in-depth persona research we have ever seen anybody come to us with. And I'm like, yeah, I hope so. I like educate people on how to build brands for a living. I would hope that I'd know how to do this decently well. But my target market, I mean, one, I did a bunch of research, competitive research to understand, you know, what other folks were offering. Clearly for me, it's a little bit different. I already had a product in mind. So it's not like I'm going out there to make a product or to fill a hole. So really looking competitively, okay, you know, what are these folks offering versus like, what do I know that I have and the messaging that I should really bring out that maybe other folks aren't. So that was a big part of it. And then other than that, I mean, really right now, and I think this is true for any business that's just getting started. I mean, I'm still trying to find my sea legs, right? In terms of like, okay, where does this resonate most? How will this work? And for me right now, I'm finding quite a bit of success with really harping on the kind of like Texas first, Texas built brand. And so targeting on Facebook ads, flyers, even considering billboards, we're going to talk about that later, or folks here specifically in Texas. So the tagline that I've seen really, really working is welcome to the softer side of Texas, which is great. And it seems to be working really well. People really, really like it. Of course, I'm still getting orders from across the country as well. I'm selling only in the contingent US right now for a lot of reasons, mostly because it's incredibly expensive to ship pillows because I'm not compressing them, which means that they are large but light. And that is the worst thing that you want a product to be with mm-hmm. dimensional shipping. So it's actually really expensive to ship internationally. So yeah, did that answer your question?
Yeah, it did. So
okay, great.
Focus first on Texas, but really you could be targeting a larger audience.
Oh, yes. Well, and my audience clearly isn't just Texans by any means. The sustainability aspect of it is super important to me, as is the, you know, being made in the U.S. portion. But the other thing that seems to be really interesting and helpful for folks is the no foam positioning. So foam is such an interesting product. It really started getting popular kind of in the 70s or so, mostly because it's so incredibly cheap to produce and it's super light. You can fold it, you can do anything with it, and it'll pop back into shape. And all of that makes it really, really good for shipping. So historically, most of your furniture, your pillows, all of that jazz were made with cotton versus foam. And that began changing in the 70s. Now, there's the problem with foam is one, it never goes away. So from an environmental standpoint, not fantastic. But beyond that, and the more important side of it, potentially, depending on what you think is more important, is that foam is highly flammable, both in the production process and afterwards. The U.S. actually requires that all foam products be sprayed with a chemical flame retardant before they're being sold to consumers. So if you can imagine, your foam pillow and your foam mattress all have chemical flame retardants all over them in order to actually be sold to you. Beyond that, for the people who work in the factories themselves, foam is highly flammable and there is no way around it. It just makes for an incredibly dangerous working environment for those folks. And I, you know, growing up in a family that, you know, owns a manufacturing company, my grandfather tried in kind of the early years to move into foam and burnt things down, as you might imagine, and decided, nope, not going that route. But coming from a family that, you know, comes from a manufacturing or owns a manufacturing company, the workers are just really close to our family. They're how we sustain. A vast majority of manufacturing companies in the United States are owned by families like mine. So small business families that are, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 generations of serving, you know, just kind of a handful of customers. Manufacturing is also right now missing about 3 million people in terms of like they have jobs out there that they need people to take. Manufacturing gives so much back to the overall economy for, you know, every unit produced, you're producing like 3 to 5x the jobs for that. So you imagine a manufacturer creates a product, a retailer like me will buy that product and sell that product to somebody. And in a lot of instances, say if you're selling on Amazon and other places as well, you're helping, you know, all of those businesses actually succeed and actually be able to work. So pretty not cool if throughout that entire process, we're just completely disregarding the factory worker and their safety and their livelihood and their salary and what's important to them. And what's worse is that the vast majority of factory workers live in the, you know, middle of the United States. They don't live in the tech hubs or the tech centers that seem to be some of the wealthier parts. So for me, it's also just really important to make sure that we're giving, I don't know, fair and equal opportunity as much as possible to people throughout the U.S. for, you know, jobs that make them feel good, that keep them safe, that help them put food on the table, build families and the livelihoods that they need.
That's great. And so
that was a lot.
It was super interesting. It's really funny to me because so my husband works at Polar Tech, which I don't know if you know that company, but they make fabric. And they're also made in the U.S. and have factories in the U.S. And he like refuses to buy anything that isn't made in the U.S.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. It's super important. And I mean, I don't refuse to buy things from places that aren't made in the U.S., but I do. My interest is always piqued when things are made in the U.S. Again, we have a very large manufacturing industry in the United States, and it sustains a large portion of middle America. And I know those folks through, I mean, like we can look at, you know, media, we can look at, you know, political spectrums, I mean, whatever you want, but those folks feel like they've been left out and left behind, and the data kind of supports them that they have been. And if there's anything that any one of us can do on a regular basis to help kind of bridge that gap and help our fellow citizens, it's buying things that are made here in the US and supporting small manufacturers.
Yeah, I agree. So you mentioned a little bit of some of the marketing tactics that you're trying out, like billboards. What's working for the brand so far?
Oh man. Well, let's talk about what's not working. God, Facebook sucks. Like, man. It is so expensive. It is crazy. I have been writing so much and trying to educate people for so long on Facebook advertising. And I'm like, geez, like practice and theory are two very different things. Mm. I've accidentally overspent like $500 on that platform, which is a lot of money when you are just starting out. So Facebook not working incredibly well. Now I still do have like retargeting ads on for folks who land there. If somebody like initiates a checkout using Facebook for that. But really what I'm focusing on to drive traffic in a way that, and what I mean by Facebook sucks is it's just expensive. Like if you have the money to do it, like dear God, it's going to work wonders for you. I don't. I'm bootstrapping this. Like I'm choosing to bootstrap it mostly because I don't want to, you know, sell anything away by any means. But instead of that, I'm really doubling down on partnerships with a lot of local brands here in Austin, as well as getting into a bunch of industry newsletters. I was featured actually on the first day that I launched in a 2 p.m. and then was featured in The Hustle not too long after that, which was really great. And then I'm also reaching out to a bunch of folks my personal background's in content marketing and SEO. So I am working on building out an organic traffic strategy, building blog posts, getting backlinks, writing content for a bunch of other websites, particularly home goods sites, because right now I have so many backlinks from technology companies, which is great. And I have, you know, a bunch of contacts and friends in that industry. But all of my pages are like hovering right now on like page two of Google, like top of page two. And I know it's because Google's like, weird, this site seems reputable and has a lot of great links from a lot of really great companies, but none of them related to what the site is about.
Yes. Seems to be a disconnect between pillows and tech.
Yeah, it seems to be a disconnect. Weird. We won't put this on page one yet. And I'm like, okay, I need to go out and find myself some home good stuff. So I'm doing all of that stuff on the side. And then, yeah, looking at some more traditional and maybe more, well, one, traditional marketing and advertising tactics like billboards. For instance, did you know you can buy a billboard for a month in like nowhere, Texas, on I-10 though, coming in from Louisiana for $1,000?
Wow. No, I did not.
$1,000. It's insane. And I could put welcome to the softer side of Texas for people coming in from Louisiana right there for $1,000. It's crazy. Anyway, I could spend $1,000 on Facebook and get nothing. That's where that cost of acquisition or just like overall what you're spending for what you're getting, at least for me, is really coming into play. I'm also doing a bunch in terms of, yeah, printing out flyers and direct mailers and getting those, you know, sent to folks who are just moving to the state, going to a bunch of apartment buildings, getting them placed there. So yeah, partnerships, content, traditional bootstrapping, get out, talk to people kind of stuff.
Nice. And so I also noticed that you only really have three different product options on the site. So there's the classic pillow, the thin pillow, and the thick pillow.
Yeah.
So why did you choose to focus on those three specific products? And are you planning on offering any more or no?
Sure. So I always knew that I wanted to start with a small catalog, and there's so many reasons for that. One, it's less expensive is really the main side. Two, I wanted to build out a customer base. For me, it's super important that the first, you know, 100 customers that I have are gotten in a way that is as cost effective as possible, but that also they have a good experience, that I'm getting good reviews, that things are going really well before I really begin to ramp things up. Again, I was about to call it a luxury, and it's not necessarily a luxury to like be able to go out and like completely build a new product based on like what you see in the market. But I didn't do that. I'm buying products from my family, right? I knew what I was buying. So it was super important to me to make sure that consumers actually really liked it. So that's kind of where I'm at now and why I decided to just go with 3. I do want to expand in the future, but first I'm focused on building up organic traffic, figuring out the right cost of customer acquisition channels for me, and finding some really great partners and really continuing to double down on the partner strategy before I look to expand. So I would expect to not see me expanding product line for at least another year.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've seen that for a couple of other brands that we've talked to. So I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You did also talk about the fact that the brand's very into being eco-friendly, and that I saw on the site that the pillows are made out of recycled plastic water bottles.
They are, yes.
Which is very exciting.
So exciting. Yes. Yeah, so they are made out of recycled plastic water bottles. Now, that's just like technically polyester for everybody listening. Let's do a quick like fiber, like deep dive here, like lesson 101. Now, a lot of pillows are made out of polyester, and they're often the cheaper ones, but I'm going to make a caveat here. Most of the pillows that are made out of polyester are using virgin polyester. So that means virgin plastic, net new plastic that was created specifically for this purpose. That sucks, because we already have a crap ton of plastic out there. And if you pay attention to the news or anything at all, or you know, you are somebody who thinks of yourself as even just eco-conscious, and then you probably know that there's a lot of plastic rolling around our world right now, particularly in the oceans. Certainly don't need a whole lot net new of it. So most pillows are not made with the recycled plastic bottle fiber. That was really important to me to make sure that that was what we were getting. Also, all of that is, as we've talked about, made in the U.S. So all of the plastic water bottles are actually being diverted from U.S. landfills. So for every pound of pillow fill, we were diverting 14 plastic bottles from U.S. landfills, which is super cool and important. And then beyond that, there's some other like really positive things about using recycled plastic water bottles. For instance, recycled plastic water bottles are like turning that into fiber. It takes a whole lot less water than it does to make organic cotton or cotton in general, something that's usable for a pillow. So even when you start comparing it against some of what folks might say are more natural products, a lot of those products still take a whole ton of water in order to actually make usable for pillow fill, and recycled plastic bottle fiber just isn't one of those that does that. So kind of has a double hit there, both in actually reusing the plastic that we've already put into this world and giving it another purpose, upcycling it, if you will, and also reducing water usage in terms of creating any kind of net new product that's right for inside of a pillow, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And so if someone wants to try out one of your fancy recycled water bottle pillows, you guys also offer a 60-day free trial.
We do. And you know what is so crazy? We've only had one person return the pillows far. I know, which is so exciting. We've had one person exchange for a thick one, and then we had one person return them. And that person that returned them said that she loved the pillow, but I guess nobody listening to this would know, but when I first launched, I had the thick pillow, was actually called the firm pillow. And that was the one that this woman had bought. And she just said that it just wasn't as firm as she needed it to be, which is fair because she was coming from a foam pillow. Foam pillows are notoriously firm. So the thick pillow, I ended up changing it from firm to thick, actually worked with her a little bit. Like I said, I'm really into making sure that I'm getting as much customer feedback as I possibly can right now. Anyways, changed the product name to thick, and also just continuing to make it incredibly clear that these are soft pillows. Like, this is not foam. These pillows are like really soft, squishy, moldable, foldable, washable, all of those things. They are not firm. If there's one thing they are not, it is not firm.
Yeah, you said you're trying to get all this feedback from your buyers. And I saw a ton of testimonials on the site as well.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's amazing. So how did you source these reviews and how important are they to building the brand?
Oh my God, they're so important. I mean, nobody buys anything online without like first checking out those reviews. Second, I mean, I'm using stamps.io is the like app I have plugged in on the back end of BigCommerce. And after 14 days, shoots people an email, says, hey, did you like get, could you review it? And people have been reviewing it. It's ridiculous. And like, I get like, some days I'll just like wake up and have like three different messages in my inbox where they're like 5-star review. And I'm like, what? I think I got 1 2-star review and it was because the product didn't get to him on time. And it was because he ordered right before the Christmas holiday. And I'm using a 3PL, so third party logistics provider, that's ShipBob. And ShipBob had, they gave their employees time off for 2 days. So typically I'm like, oh, like as soon as you order within that day, the product's going to ship out. And it actually didn't ship out until Christmas, until after Christmas. So there was like a good 3-day period there when the product was just sitting. So anyways, totally fair and understandable review, but I got back to that nice man and chatted with him a little bit about it and it was all fine. So that's, nice. That's where we're at.
One thing that I feel like I have to bring up on almost any podcast is sure. Amazon. So are you at all worried about competing with, you know, cheaper commodity pillows on Amazon or any of the mattress brands that sell, you know, or that give out pillows along with the mattress? How do you stand out from these kinds of brands?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. I'll be honest. I'm not worried or concerned about Amazon right now, nor am I, too terribly worried or concerned about, you know, what some of those mattress brands are doing, mostly because a lot of the mattress brands, all of them actually are using either virgin polyester or foam. And I feel like I have a pretty good leg to stand up on there. Other than that, though, I mean, I'm just starting out. I'm the small guy in the game, right? I'm really, really focused on making sure that the customers and the folks who buy the pillows really, really like them there and have a good experience with it. And then getting those reviews in. I'm a big believer and tides that rise. And so for me, it's starting with that, you know, core group of first buyers over this, you know, next 6 months or so, and then really beginning to expand from there. Now, I mean, Amazon may be something that becomes more of a competitor, or more of a concern for me in the future. But if I am good about building brand equity and have folks who know my name and are looking for my pillow, even if and when I expand to Amazon, folks are not going to be deterred by a cheaper pillow if they're coming to look for mine. I mean, if you imagine the scenario, I mean, for instance, if you're, you know, driving to the BMW dealership to buy a new BMW, you aren't going to like pull off to the Subaru one because you saw a bunch of Subarus on your way over. Like that's just not, that's not how people work. Or imagine yourself in a grocery store, right? Say you're at HEB is big here in Austin, or Central Market for other folks. Say you walk into a Central Market and you know, you're like, I want Heinz ketchup. I love Heinz. I want Heinz, right? You go in there, you go to the aisle. It doesn't matter if like all around the Heinz ketchup, if Central Market has their cheaper brand there, it doesn't matter to you. That's not what you're there for. You're there for the Heinz. That's brand equity. And that starts with building the foundation that I'm trying to build now. So not worried about any of those things right now. They might be bigger worries in the future. But really what I'm focused on is building a great experience. And that ultimately leads to brand equity so that I don't have to worry about this thing.
Love that. Yeah, that's something we talk about all the time too, that if you're trying to compete on price, you're probably going to lose. So you should probably build something that has value in another way.
Right.
So the other question I ask everybody that comes in the show is about failure. What is one time that you failed? What happened and what did you learn from it?
Oh man. Okay. Failed with Doris or like failed at anything?
You could literally share any story. Failed at life, failed at business, failed at whatever.
I mean, I'll be honest. I feel like I'm failing all the time. I also think that if you don't feel like that, you're probably not taking enough risks. Risks are inherently what get you to be successful. They're what help you grow. They're what teach you things. If you are not taking small risks or even large risks relatively often. I want to say I love you guys. I don't know like who's listening to this, but I'm about to give some harsh advice here. If you aren't feeling like you're failing often, you're probably a little bit stagnant, and that's not fantastic. So with Doris, one of the big times that I failed is that I overspent $500 twice of my own good hard-earned, not like venture capital money on absolutely nothing. It's just me not realizing, like, it's me really sucking at Facebook. Like, I feel like I'm angry at Facebook and it's not their fault, it's mine. But yeah, it's just me being really, really bad at it, forgetting to turn campaigns off, not doing targeting correctly, still trying to get back there and figure out the entire thing. So continuing to work on that. Personally, a big kind of failure of mine often is I get excited about things and I overbook myself regularly. I mean, Kara, I think you and I even rescheduled this interview how many times?
I think 3 times.
Yeah, not uncommon for me. And it's something that I need to be and work on being more cognizant of, trying to make sure that if I do need to reschedule, that I don't reschedule that person or that call ever again, that I'm really doing my best to manage my time both at work and in my personal life as well. I mean, I have a full-time job outside of Doris, and then I certainly want to work on Doris, and then I do consulting for a few other brands. I mean, I'm busy busy because I want to be, right? But busy is also an excuse. It's not a reality. If you feel time poor, you are time poor. If you feel time rich, you are time rich. That's something I constantly work on because it affects interviews like this with you. It affects relationships that I have, you know, with folks who like work at GGV or places like that, like certainly not fantastic. And also, you know, affects my marriage or my friendships or whatever it is. So that's really pretty much a constant failure that I'm working on. So I don't fail at it all the time is what I'm trying to say. But yeah, so it's something that I'm really, really constantly trying to work on.
I relate to that so much.
Amazing.
I feel like a lot of people will, but yeah, and I would like to note that one of those reschedules was on me. So it's not all you.
Oh, good.
So the last question, just to finish up, is about change, because, you know, in the marketing world, everything changes all the time. And in the e-commerce world, everything changes all the time.
Yeah.
So what change have you seen, and what do you think is coming next that's going to be impacting B2C and e-commerce businesses?
Oh my gosh. Okay, guys, malls are coming back and I am so excited. I was born in 88, so like the 90s were like my prime like kid years, and the mall was like everything then. I think malls, I guess I'll have to say I think, because I can't say I know. It's not like it's definitively happening yet, but I would bet just about everything I have on the fact that malls are going to come back. There's some really, really cool stuff that a lot of mall property owners are really looking into. For instance, they're replacing some of those more legacy brands with direct-to-consumer brands like Andy Swim or Allbirds or, you know, whomever, and they're doing them in kind of pop-up ways, or they're, you know, helping to establish them as more, you know, mainstays within malls. Malls are also redesigning their insides, right? So that, like, you know, you can go there and like want to take an Instagram picture and that'll be fun. They're also, you know, thinking about serving alcohol and building out events. Like, God, like imagine all of the malls across the country right now with all of the square footage about to like suddenly become like community hubs again. Personally, and am ridiculously excited about it, though I guess I'm kind of skirting around the real question and the real trend there, which is physical retail is incredibly important. There was a good amount of time, maybe the past three, four years, where it has been all about the DNVBs, the digitally native vertical brands, like all online, like everyone needs to do that. And it's true, like that is important. And I think now there is some real table stakes in terms of what you do online, and that being really important, both in terms of design and user experience and customer experience. But we're also realizing that physical is not going away. As a matter of fact, it's becoming more important. Gen Z in particular tends to rate offline as incredibly important, those offline experiences. Even millennials rate offline experiences as incredibly important. So yeah, I read a really good article not too long ago by this guy. I should know his name. I've like retold the story so many times because I'm just so in love with it. I read it. It was in a Southwest magazine. Anyway, it was about this guy who Airbnb reached out to and ended up working with. He was, you know, retired back in his like heyday. He had launched a line of boutique hotels throughout the country that were relatively inexpensive and had both celebrities stay at and just regular people. It was like this huge hit. Anyways, he's retired, happy man, like, you know, did well. And Airbnb reached out to him and they were like, look, we're struggling to really make these offline experiences as important and as amazing as we know they need to be. Please come in and please help us do this. And he did. He started working for them part-time, came out of retirement to do it. And then I think he ended up working for them full-time for a couple years. He's gone back into retirement now, but Airbnb is like what it is now. And you begin to think about the super host experiences and a bunch of the cool stuff Airbnb is doing. They just acquired Hotel Tonight. A lot of that was thanks to this man's offline experience. And that's just so cool to me, because for the first time potentially in history ever, you have like four or five generations of people working in the workforce, and you have folks like that guy who was in retirement, was able to come out, coming in to help, you know, millennials and others who are might be really good at digital and this DMVB side, but are like, crap, physical is also really important, and I do not have the skill set for that. Pulling in the folks who do, I don't know. I think it's a really, really exciting time. You also see legacy brands actually either buying out or acquiring a lot of those DNVBs, but also actually putting money behind these customer experiences that have been proven we all really like, right? And that's always been the danger for DNVBs is that, I mean, technically P&G could come in and outspend you any day of the week if they wanted to. And turns out that a lot of those brands are about to start doing that. And they're beginning to launch their own experiments and beginning to put money behind some really cool things. And so that's all the stuff that's changing. And I'm personally really excited about it. At the end of the day, all of that stuff can change, but what never changes is what actually sells people, which is good customer service, being nice to people, being honest with folks, good marketing, right? Like the avenues and the messages change, sure, but like what really convinces people, what really builds loyalty, what really gets us to build community and a tide that rises around something, I mean, that's always the same.
To learn more about Doris Sleep and check out their line of pillows, visit DorisSleep.com. That's DorisSleep.com. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. And I want to put out an open call right now to everyone to suggest new brands that we should interview for the show. I'm looking for founders, marketers, and anyone who's doing something really interesting in e-commerce. Please email me at empoweredmarketer@zayas.com with your suggestions. Thanks again, and I'll see you lovely humans again in 2 weeks.